tracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Hi, I'm Peter Norton.
I'm Craig Revelle. Thanks for joining us once again on Inside Motorsport.
In a week that has seen tragedy of an unbelievable scale, all sport and motorsport have really taken a back page during the last week. But motorsport does go on. In fact, if these events don't go on, then the terrorists really can chalk up another victory. Some events in the US have been postponed or cancelled, but some things have still gone on, including Formula One from Monza, a kart race that was the first to be held in Germany, and in Australia we've got the Sandown 500. This weekend we'll be bringing you highlights of most of those, but first of all, let's go to the BBC's World Service for all of the details from Formula One qualifying at Monza.
For the third time of asking, Montoya has the chance to transfer qualifying supremacy into race control. Twice before he's led, on both occasions in Germany and in Belgium, his engine's gone up in smoke. Barrichello's presence on the front row ahead of Michael Schumacher increases his claim to his second Ferrari victory, but Schumacher's appetite looks as empty as it's ever been in Formula One. His demeanour so far has matched the black front nose of his sticker-free Ferrari. Like Montoya, truly deserves an instant free race from fifth, while Mika Hakkinen's planned sabbatical will be viewed with increasing scepticism if he repeats his qualifying charge into the barriers from seventh.
In Grand Prix 2001, it's Juan Pablo Montoya, Rubens Barrichello and Michael Schumacher. Juan Pablo, many congratulations, your third pole of the season, and you went quicker and quicker all through the session. Was that your perfect qualifying?
No, you know, the car was really good. We worked a lot this morning, tried to make it, you know, better and better. We knew that in the morning we're not going to be that competitive because it was very cold. As the temperature came up, you know, we'll become stronger and stronger, and you know, the car was really good. We didn't do, you know, we only adjusted the front wing a little bit through qualifying, and that was about it. I think there was a bit more time there, so I was very pleased with that.
Thanks and well done. Rubens, it's the first time this year you've managed to out-qualify Michael. It's a great platform for you to go for second in the championship tomorrow.
Well, but altogether I don't think it means a lot because, you know, there is a long race ahead. I think, you know, I had a really good car today. I had all the support that I needed. I think Monza is very special with all the Tifosi, and I'm happy to be having a good time in qualifying, hopefully in the race.
Thank you, Michael, individual sectors today were very good, but I think it's fair to say you found it difficult to string together the perfect lap.
Yeah, in the important run, certainly there was a mistake inside. That was the third last run in the first sector, and that killed the overall lap time. But that's the way it is sometimes in qualifying. You can't always do things very well. Obviously, I was trying to go for the pole position, so the only way to get that time was pushing very hard, and may overdo it.
Michael, thank you. One third time on pole. What do you have to do tomorrow to make it third time lucky and your first win?
I think, you know, it's going to be hard. You know, Ferraris have been really consistently quick through all the weekend as well. So, you know, I think it's going to be quite an interesting race, you know. I think the basic start is, you know, try to have a clean, you know, clean start, and we'll go from there.
So let's have a look at the grid for tonight's Italian Grand Prix from Monza. Juan Pablo Montoya on pole position, and third time this year, and let's see if Montoya can actually take it through to a victory this time around. Second in the number two Ferrari is Rubens Barrichello, a fine effort there. The world champion-elect, Michael Schumacher, qualifying third from his brother Ralf Schumacher in fourth. Jarno Trulli putting in a great effort to qualify fifth from David Coulthard, Mika Hakkinen, Nick Heidfeld, Kimi Räikkönen, and rounding out the top 10, Pedro De La Rosa. Looking down the field a little bit further, Heinz-Harald Frentzen in 12th, Eddie Irvine in 13th, Fisichella 14th, 15th, Jacques Villeneuve, from Alesi, Panis, Benoldi, Verstappen, Thomas Enge from the Formula 3000, having a run there in the Prost, and the Minardi is rounding out the 22-car field. And, of course, later in the show, we'll have a bit more of a chat and an insight into the way Formula One are responding to the terrorist attacks in the US, sort of having some tributes and all celebrations at the end of the Monza race will really be subdued. And of course, there are thoughts about how they will then proceed to the US for the American Grand Prix from Indianapolis. So we'll have some more insight into that later in the program. In light of the terrorist attacks during the week, American Motorsport has found it difficult to get back to business, with NASCAR postponing this weekend's Winston Cup race from New Hampshire International Raceway. The Indy Racing League also not racing this weekend, but one series that was racing this weekend, because they'd already made the trip over to Germany, was the Kart FedEx Championship, racing for the first time at a new track built in Germany. And of course, these American-based teams feeling a very strong connection to the tragedies back in New York and Washington. Championship Auto Racing teams, the sanctioning body for the series, have donated $500,000 to an appropriate World Trade Center relief fund. Also, the Championship Drivers Association have donated $50,000 American to the American Red Cross. And as a final tribute to the tragedy, the name of the race had been changed to the American Memorial, and that is the name the race will continue to carry into the years that come. Now, during the warm-up and qualifying, it was actually a bit of a turn-up for the books. Mo Nun Racing, and in particular Alex Zanardi, was showing some amazing form. He's struggled all year long, but as we'll uncover, as we run through the results, we'll find out that that story really didn't have a happy ending for him, Alex Zanardi being involved in an accident in the late stages of the race. This first race in Germany was quite a commercial success, with 87,000 people attending the race, which was something quite remarkable as they try to build the kart championship in Europe, in particular being up against the Italian Grand Prix from Monza this weekend. As we turn to the race results, it was Kenny Brack who won the race from Max Pappas, Patrick Carpentier, Michael Andretti and Oriol Servo rounding out the top five. But unfortunately, the story of the race has been the very nasty accident involving Alex Tagliani and Alex Zanardi. Zanardi being flown to hospital with some very severe injuries. So let's first hear from Kenny Brack about his thoughts of winning this race and also other events.
Well, I mean, we were up there all the race. We didn't have the fastest car. I think both Zanardi and Canaan was a little better. We were better on fuel mileage, but it's good for me and for the team to get the victory here. But it's in light of recent happenings, both in the United States and here, it's put a big damping on everything. And I hope Zanardi and the play guy is okay. And I really hope everything else will be okay too. So.
And second place in the race was Kenny Brack's teammate Max Pappas, who had very similar sentiments.
Very difficult, you know, the emotions of the good results for Team Leo are completely overshadowed by what happened with my friend Alex and you know, with what happened in the United States. You know, I really don't know what to say. I pray God that you know, that the good wins over the bad situation. And this is a sport event. We are, you know, showing people that with a good will you can achieve great goals in your life. And that's what Alex and all the people that they are successful always think about. So I pray for my friend Alex. This is the most important thing. And, you know, for all the people in the United States, that, you know, God take care of them.
And, of course, everyone's thoughts are really with Alex Zanardi and his upcoming challenges to battle these injuries he sustained in that race. And now we have a few words from Dr. Steve Ovalby about the nature of the injuries to Zanardi and also Tagliani.
Alex Zanardi is extremely critical. He's had severe injuries to both of his lower extremities, has had significant blood loss, but he is responding. He is breathing on his own. So we're sending him to the Berlin Major Trauma Center. Alex Tagliani is awake and alert. He's moving everything. He has only back pain. We think he may have a minor injury to the small of his back. Otherwise, he's okay. They're both going to the same hospital in Berlin.
So there you have it, a rather somber race in Germany. These American-based teams, of course, their minds on other things back home in their homeland. And, of course, it didn't end as a very happy weekend, with a very nasty accident there for Tagliani and Zanardi, and in particular Alex Zanardi. What a character of the sport, what a true champion. And although he seems to be breathing and well in those respects, it does seem to be very much the end of his career, unfortunately. He really did bring life to the sport, and what a fantastic competitor. Unfortunately, had suffered with poor form for most of the year, and this was really the race that he was returning to the top, and perhaps his haste to get back out onto the track contributed to him spinning out as he rejoined the track after pitting, and that's what led him to spin in front of Tagliani, and Tagliani was left with really nowhere to go at very high speed and T-boning the car, and it's really not surprising the types of injuries that Zanardi has suffered. And in fact, it's quite a miracle that Zanardi has survived at all. What a very nasty accident it was, and I'm sure listeners will tune into various TV news broadcasts to get footage of that accident. A very nasty piece of action, and we're very pleased that Alex Zanardi was not injured more than he actually was.
The Sandown 500 has been completed for the 34th time. John Bow is the winner, and of course, John not running the Mustang that we're so familiar with, Chris Nixon. What a weekend it was for the Nations Cup and all the competitors of the Procar Series this weekend at Sandown.
Good evening, Craig. It turned out to be a fantastic day's racing in the Clarion Sandown 500. John Bow shared a Ferrari 360 with the car owner, Tom Waring. They ran under the Prentice Bush team banner and did a brilliant job, I must say. John survived a late challenge from Rick Bates, who really put his foot down in Steve Webb's Porsche GT3, got within 2.4 seconds of the Ferrari in the closing laps, but quite clearly Bow had the situation under control and was able to cross the line something like just over 3 seconds ahead of the Porsche.
It was always going to be a battle between economy and outright speed, and of course Jeff Morgan in the Viper had one on Saturday, but he was changing back to a Porsche for the racing in the 500 kilometre event.
He was asked at the post-race press conference whether he regretted not driving the Viper, since it obviously would have been a very fast car at Sandown, but he said there were technical considerations such as the complexities and location of the fuel tank for a long distance race, and he thought the Porsche was a better option, and indeed it turned out to be that way because he finished third, two laps down with Peter Fitzgerald in the Falcon Porsche GT3. They struggled throughout from almost the beginning of the race with without fifth gear. This was after they had completed a Gearbox rebuild overnight. Pete tried to do the championship race yesterday morning and retired with a broken gearbox. They went away and rebuilt the gearbox, but they were out in the track no time at all today, and fifth gear went again, and from then on Fitzgerald and Morgan basically struggled with fourth being the maximum practical gear pull, and so it was a terrific effort for them to come up from the back of the grid, literally from the back of the grid up to third outright and two laps down on the first and second cars.
Of course, the only Viper that was in the race was the one being campaigned by Darcy Russell. How did he fare?
He would have been spectacular, and there's no doubt about it. That Viper's definitely a weapon, but regrettably, it wasn't up to the task today. Very early in the piece, it broke an axle. We thought that was going to be the end of the Viper. Darcy Russell parked it, but eventually he managed to limp back to the pits on one axle. They took an axle, in fact, a drive shaft out of Jeff Morgan's Monster.com Viper, and got the Viper going again. But they were only able to complete a handful of laps in the end, and finished well down the order. If you'll give me a minute, I'll tell you exactly where they finished. But certainly the finishing position for the Viper did not reflect its performance. But having said that, it was a brilliant race. It was notable for I suppose, among other things, the reliability of the Ferraris, which would have been the last cars, I think, that anybody would have expected to go the distance. But only one retired, and that was the car of Craig Baird and Steve Beers, which in fact had retired while leading. Just to recap, by the way, Darcy Russell and Darren Farmer finished 19th. They were the last classified finisher out of, I think, 34 starters overall at midday today. but they had the compensation of the fastest lap. They were the last car to finish, but they gained the fastest lap with Darren Palmer in the seat, a 1:17.70 in that fantastic Viper. So it was notable not only for the reliability of the Ferraris, which certainly led to them achieving an outstanding result collectively, but also the fact that there were no safety cars at the press conference later on. All the drivers, Peter Fitzgerald, Jeff Morgan, and the other leading contenders, praised the drivers of the slower cars for the polite behaviour that they observed on the track. And we got through the race, therefore, in pretty quick time, a total time of 3 hours and 39 minutes for 161 laps or 500 kilometres.
And of course, this year marked a return to class racing at the Sandown 500, something that hadn't been seen probably for the last 10 years in the last 10 years of the 34-year history of the race.
That's right. The race incorporated not only the Nations Cup cars, but the Class A, B and C cars from the Australian GT Production Car Championship. And it's predicted they did very well. They're a little less stressed than the Nations Cup cars in terms of their technical development, and therefore a tad more reliable. There was a ripper race between Bob Hughes and Rick Bates in their Evo 6. Hughes, of course, from Batemans Bay, and Rick from Canberra. And the latest model Subaru WRX STI of Wayne Boatwright and the car owner Scott Anderson, running under the Altera Software Team banner, they did surprisingly well. They hadn't been too hopeful of this car, which, as you recall, made its debut at Eastern Creek a few weeks ago and was well off the pace. But it has really come up into a good car here at Sandown, and they finished second in that class with the Formula 3 driver Damon Templeton and car owner Peter Phelan in the Honda S2000 Sports, taking out third in class. That was a ripper race, and it's just a little bit disappointing that the Holden GTS Commodore of Cameron McConville and Peter Floyd retired with a broken diff about halfway through the race, because they had led that Class A for all of the event until that stage. McConville did a brilliant job and was consistently running an eighth outright place in a Holden Commodore sedan, albeit an HSV. It was a fantastic result.
And of course, in Class B, of course, the battle of the small cars, Nathan Thomas and Nathan Pilkington had a good battle with Tim Lay and the Volkswagen in Class B right throughout the Saturday racing. How did that fare in Sunday?
Well, neither of those guys actually competed in the Sandown 500, and the winner of the sports touring class was a very familiar little racing car, I guess, and that was the Honda Integra Type R of Len Cave and Bob Wright. Bob Wright's a Victorian HQ driver. Len Cave is well known. He's been campaigning that little Honda quite a while, stuck it into the concrete in a big way in Queensland, put the front off it, and had it rebuilt just in time for the Sandown 500, and came away with a class win ahead of Wayne Russell and Steve Cramp in that familiar BMW 323i. And third is the most raced car in Australia, I'm sure, and that's Colin Osborne's Toyota MR2, which on this occasion he shared with Rick Shaw. That's the car that many will remember having been driven by Manuel Fangio in the Bathurst 12-hour years and years ago.
And of course, Class C and D are the two final classes that made competition of the Sandown 500 today.
Well, Class C and D were combined because, in fact, there was only one Class D entry, which is Alan Holgerson, but he didn't take the start. So we were left with a great battle between the V8 touring cars. The ultimate winner was Scott Lodesman with Warren Luff in the Commodore SS, that's the Chev engine one rather than the 5-litre one. John McElroy and Brett Yulden, second in the Falcon XR8. And two more Yulden in third place, Kent Yulden and his son Luke Yulden in third place in another XR8. That's the James Phillip car that ran, that James ran in the championship round yesterday.
Now, of course, television coverage is next weekend on Channel 10 for those who want to see the action. But what about the fans? How did they turn up with Brutes running and, of course, the Sandown 500, the main draw card of this weekend's racing?
Well, it should be said that Sandown promoter John Davison did a sensational job
down here in Melbourne today. The track looked a picture. It was beautifully presented. There was an enormous amount of entertainment for the fans, from car displays on the sides to a Ute muster, to a grid walk, and many other attractions on the day. It was probably the best independent park car meeting that's been staged this year, without question. A huge amount of racing enjoyed by all.
All right then, Chris, and we appreciate your time this evening to give us all the rundown of the 34th running, the Clarion Sandown 500, and we congratulate all the winners there today in Melbourne at the Sandown Raceway.
Now, thank you, Craig, about it, that the Clarion Sandown 500 will be shown on Network 10 nationally on Sunday the 30th of September at 3:30pm, a special show. Next weekend on Trackside on Network 10, you'll see the championship races from this weekend starting at 2:30pm.
All right. Chris, thanks once again for your time, joining us right throughout this weekend.
Thank you very much, Craig.
Well, the winner today in the Sandown 500 in one of the Prancing Horse Racing Team Ferraris, John Bauer. John, how's it feel to be a winner once again back down at Sandown?
Oh, man, it's fantastic. It's good to be a winner in any race or in any situation, but this particular race, it has a really strong and old tradition, and I was lucky enough to win it twice in the 90s with Dick Johnson. We came second a few times, and to win it again now, even though it's for a different category, it's still a traditional 500k race, so I'm over the moon.
Given particularly that the strength of the opposition that was there in terms of the Porsches, the other Ferraris, and the Mitsubishis and Subarus and so on, obviously a good win.
Yeah, it was. I honestly, when the race started, I thought it would be a Porsche benefit because traditionally they're just so strong, but they actually had some problems. So, and my car didn't miss a beat, and my co-driver, who actually owns the car, Tom Waring, did a terrific job, and we got into a strategy where we could I could stay in the car for the latter half of the race. So it was it's a good team effort, mate. It's what wins motor races, team efforts.
You think probably coming from having run the Queensland 500, a recent endurance event, stepping in as well into the Sandown 500, you were still in that long-distance mode?
I don't think it matters, really. I mean, to race professionally, you have to be fit and healthy and strong, and I am, so, and luckily, this race is just another long race, but it was in a Ferrari, and it was in a left-hand drive Ferrari, so it was different. And, you have to be adaptable, as most people are that are involved in motor racing. But the team, the Prancing Horse guys, did a fantastic job, and I'm very, very proud to be part of it.
In this case, your co-driver, Tom Waring, for him, it was his first time out in this category, I believe.
Yes, it was. Tom has been a sporadic racer over the last, say, 10 years, but he hasn't done the full season for a long time. And he comes from Hong Kong. He lives in Hong Kong. It's his car. So it was just an opportunity to drive with him, and he hadn't driven at Sandown before, so I thought I'd give him a hand, and he's a terrific guy, and I'm very pleased for him.
Mm. Well, John, once again, congratulations on winning at the Sandown 500 today, and that makes it three for your trophy cabinet.
Yeah, I mean, man, when you're sitting in the retirement home looking back on it all, it'll be meaningful, but it's just nice to win. Nice to win with these people. They're nice people.
Yeah. Well, John, I think in your case, it's a few more years before you've got to go to retire.
I hope you're right.
Okay, John Bauer. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, mate. Cheers.
Cheers.
And now joining us is a driver from the second place car, the Techno Autosports Porsche GT3, Neil Bates. Neil, for you, a bit of a chase there, chasing after John Bauer and that Ferrari.
Last 15 laps or so were very exciting. John Baumey's last pit stop came out about 8 seconds in front of us, and then we got down to two at one stage, but just wasn't enough, and we couldn't quite do it. But obviously, we're still very happy with the result.
Mm. Now, in terms of the race today, was there some area where you reckon that the Porsche just wasn't up to the Ferrari on the day, or was it just a matter of tactics?
The Ferrari probably had slightly better speed, but I say that, but then I was hauling him in at a very small rate at the end there, but they probably just did a slightly better job on the day, but for me I was very happy with the way I drove. I think I was the fastest car in the race most of the time during my stint, so, you know, that's about all you can do. But, yeah, a very good result for the team.
In terms of that, your co-driver, I think, Steve Webb, for him, it'd probably be a good sign for him to finish second in such a major event.
Yeah, for sure. You know, same as John Bowdre said, with Tom Waring, Steve's an enthusiast who enjoys his racing and loves his Porsche, and, you know, for him to finish second in an event like this, obviously he's incredibly happy about it.
And in terms of the Sandown 500, with this new sort of format being for the pro car category, what was the crowd like down there at Sandown?
Yeah, there was actually a very good crowd. It was quite a well put on meeting, and, you know, congratulations to John Davidson for sticking his neck out and having a 500k GTP race. But it was, yeah, very well represented, and there was a very good crowd. So all in all, it was a good event.
And for you, how do you feel it was?
Yeah, I feel that the event went off very well, and for us, I don't think we, you know, would have been lovely to be 5 seconds faster and win the event, but we weren't, but still a fabulous result.
And when do we next see you out and about?
I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure I don't have anything with Bathurst, so I think the next event for me will be Rally Australia.
And that'll probably be the last outing for the Corolla at this stage?
Yeah, that'll certainly be the last outing for the Corolla, so after that it'll be in retirement. The Corolla, not me.
The Corolla goes. And will you be going to New Zealand to watch the rally over there at all?
No, I did contemplate that, but I've just been very busy lately, so...
You did contemplate that,
at home
but
next
your
week.
Frequent flyers were Ansett?
Yeah, I did have a heap of them, but I suppose they're gone now.
Like a lot of people around town, I'm sure we're all commiserating that one.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Well, Neil, congratulations anyhow today on your second place at the Sandown 500, and we'll no doubt keep an eye on how things go. Who knows, you might get one of those last-minute seats that they're playing merry-go-rounds with in Bathurst.
Yeah, I could only hope so, but yeah, we'll just see what happens.
Thank you very much, Neil Bates.
Thank you.
And winner in one of the class battles in the Sandown 500 today was Bob Hughes, who has teamed up with Rick Bates in the Bob Hughes Special Vehicles Mitsubishi Evolution 6. Bob, how's it feel to be a class winner there in the Sandown 500?
Oh, fantastic. You know, like, we've run a couple of endurances over the last two or three years, and, you know, often we've had the fastest car a couple of times, but we've never finished, you know. This time it... It all went to plan, so it's yeah, it's great to get a win.
In your case, Bob, if you look at the cars ahead of you there, you've got the purpose-built races in terms of the Ferrari 360s and the Porsche GT3s. They come in with the Mitsubishi Evo 6 in sixth place. That's, I think, pretty good.
Yeah, no, very pleased with that because, yeah, as you say, they're purpose-built race cars. We won the GT Performance category in the Sandown 500, so basically the GT Performance cars are... standard factory cars. We're very limited to what modifications we're allowed. Even the exhaust system is standard on our car.
Now, so, from what I understand, you had a pretty race-long ding-dong battle with Wayne Boatwright in his new Subaru.
Yeah, Wayne had the new current shape Subaru WRX STI, which is quite a bit lighter than our car. It's actually it's around about 100 kilo lighter, and it runs about 1.2 bar of boost, where we're restricted to 1 bar of boost for parity reasons. So yeah, it was good. It was a good fight with them, and but at the end we really won quite comfortably, actually.
In terms of the advantage your car probably had, do you think it was maybe was a bit better sorted out from the season compared to the new car that Wayne had?
Yeah, that would definitely come into it. You know, Wayne Boatwright is certainly no slouch at the wheel. Very good steerer. So yeah, the car is new. Hasn't had any development. But in saying that, our Evo 6 at our first time out of the box this year at the Sandown. At the Adelaide Street Races, the GMC 400, we got 2 seconds down there in the championship rounds, straight out of the box. So yeah, you could say that maybe they lack development, but it's probably more than likely the case. You know, they haven't really got it handling as well as our car. That's where Rick Bates came in very handy too, because he's got a fantastic feel for a car, and you know, he can sort of he can come back from doing a few laps and sort of you know, point us in the right direction, what he reckons we should do, you know, as far as a little bit of a bump, rebound adjustment, maybe a little bit more toe out or toe in or whatever, you know. He's very good at that, so that helped us quite a lot.
Now, Bob, in terms of the win, what's the plans from here?
Well, you know, like just doing the GT Performance National Championship this year, which I'm not faring that well in. After we did Adelaide, it all turned a bit sour. We got shunted off at Wakefield Park at the round there, and I didn't finish the races there. And anyway, we had a few bits of bad luck during the year, and blew the engine up at Eastern Creek there 2 weeks ago because we fitted the Motec engine management system, and we got away from the standard ECU, fitted a programmable management system to it, and that blew the engine up. So we're back to the standard ECU this weekend with a freshly rebuilt engine. And I should say, too, that the engine was just built by my son, Matt, who's just finished his apprenticeship as a mechanic, 19-year-old, and he's built the engine, and it just went like a beauty.
So you'd have to be fairly happy, both as the driver and as a father, that you got a young mechanic there who's doing a good job for you.
Well, he's done a fantastic job, and you know, like to build one of these engines, even though they're you know, they can't be modified in any way, they've got to be built right, because you know, the clearances have got to be absolutely spot on, because when you consider we're out there, we're down 150 something laps there today at full noise. Pretty good test for an engine.
Well, Bob, once again, congratulations on the class win in the GT Performance class there in the Sandown 500.
Yep, okay. Would you like to talk to Rick for a second?
If we could, please. Thank you.
I'll just put him on.
Joining the car with Bob Hughes was Rick Bates. Rick, we're more used to seeing you, I think, on the dirt, but also in a smaller cask car in the GT cars. How was it out there with the Mitsubishi today?
Yeah, no, it was great. I've driven with Bob before, like last year at Bathurst, and then the year before in an RX-7, I've driven a fair bit of production car stuff, and obviously I'm running the Daihatsu Sirion this year, but it was good to be in a turbo four-wheel drive car with a bit more pace, and we both, you know, went really well, had a good day, finished six out right, and won the class, so we can't ask for much better.
In terms of this, stepping up from the smaller car you normally run, obviously the opportunity to run at the front end of the field is probably a welcome one.
Oh yeah, for sure. But in a few weeks' time, I'll be driving a V8 supercar at Bathurst, which is another step up again. So I'll be running the Sirion at Bathurst as well. So there'll be a bit of adjusting jumping out of the Sirion and then into a V8 supercar, I can tell you.
In case of remembering where the four corners are.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, Rick, in terms of today, how was the traffic out there today in terms of the event? Was everybody behaving themselves?
Yeah, they were. It was extremely good. There was no safety car incidences, so that really does show how well people were behaving themselves as far as, you know, there was no prangs or safety car incidents, so that was a great clean race all the way to the end.
Well, Rick, congratulations on the class win there at the Sandown 500, and we'll see how you go at Bathurst in a few weeks' time.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Well, joining us now is the second class man in that GT Performance category, who is debuting a brand new Altura Software Subaru WRX, Wayne Boatwright. Wayne, second in class, first time out with a new car. That must be fairly good, I reckon.
Yeah, we're pretty surprised and delighted. Of course, we're running what Subaru term a new age Impreza WRX STI, which in fact the car we've got is the only example yet in Australia. So, and this is in fact its race debut. So. We've hurriedly put the thing together as race cars tends to happen with race cars, and this first time we've hadn't a lot of testing. First time we've had it on the track in anger, and we're pretty happy to be able to bring it home in second behind Rick and Bob.
No doubt your team put in a lot of hours to get the car ready in time, and you're probably showing them a few beers tonight.
Yeah, the boys are pretty happy. They've done an absolutely sensational job. Scott Anderson, who I co-drove with, and Dan Lasada oversee the preparation of the car, and they just do an amazing job. Scott actually runs my STI version 6 that we've been running in the championship, and has, as I say, done an amazing job of preparing the new age STI as well. We've received some parts at the last minute, haven't even tested the car, taken it out and raced it as is. It doesn't look after its tyres as well as it should yet. We're running the same tyres that Bob and Rick were, but Rick was a lot quicker through the S's than we were, and once we teach the car to look after its tyres, I'm sure it'll be right there on the pace. At Bathurst, we're pretty confident that the thing will not only do the distance, but have a little bit more pace.
But yesterday in the shorter race, the Jetty Performance race, I noticed that you had in the older car the legs over Bob Hughes, but today in the race that sort of, I suppose, counted in some way, it was the reverse.
Yeah, the older car actually is a couple of seconds a lap quicker than the new car, but we felt that they're a little bit fragile, the previous model WXs. We've had a lot of problems with gearboxes and brakes on the previous model, and we're not so sure that the older car would have actually done the distance. As it was, we actually ran completely out of brake pedal material and on the front of the car with about 15 laps to go. The thing was absolutely metal for metal. So, we're pretty clean, pretty keen, they're pretty glad to see the chequered flag.
Now, will this be a car that you're planning to run through the remainder of this season and into next year?
That was the plan. We need to see how the thing comes up. If the car lacks outright speed, it's probably not going to be the right gadget for the rest of the sprint rounds. So the program is so full. We've got Bathurst in 3 weeks' time and Indy 2 weeks after that. And if we can get time to get out and test and develop the thing and get the thing a little bit quicker, we'll use it for the remaining sprint rounds. But at this stage, our plan probably is to use the new car for the endurance races because it is durable, and probably to use the older model STI, the white car, for the sprint races, because at this stage it's a little bit it is a little bit quicker than the blue car.
Now, this is the first time we've seen the pro car, various categories of cars running an event like the Sandown 500. From your perspective as a competitor, what do you think of the event?
Absolutely sensational. I think the variety that production car racing offers, there's something like 20 different makes and models of car today in the Sandown 500, and I think enormous interest in seeing everything from an exotic Lamborghini to a Class E car, to an MX-5. So I think it's a great formula. I also echo what Rick and Bob have said about the standard of driving. I mean, with such huge speed differentials as you can find between a Lamborghini Diablo and a Mazda MX-5, there was a potential for some pretty big incidents. And it was amazing that we got through 500 kilometres of racing without a single safety car incident.
Mm. Now, of course, one of the matters was this year that the event was put on fairly shortish notice, so a lot of teams were looking for budget. No doubt, being a planned thing for next year, something you can plan for much better and hopefully more runners for next year's event.
Yeah, I think it's been incredibly successful. We will see more people. It was hard to suddenly find the sort of budget required to run an endurance race, especially 3 weeks before Bathurst. So it was very, very difficult for us as well. So, we're glad that we're able to scrape it together and now head off to Bathurst to see if we can knock off Batesy and Husey.
Well, Wayne, we wish you luck in your endeavours up there on the mountain, and we'll keep an eye on things, how things go for you in a few weeks' time.
Good to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wayne Boatwright joining us there on Inside Motorsport, and of course we look forward to the rest of the pro car racing this season, as it has been very exciting right throughout the year.
And of course there was racing yesterday at Sandown in supporting the Sandown 500 event. There were rounds of the GT production and GT performance Nations Cup categories there. In the races that were held yesterday, in GT Performance Race 1, the winner there was Ed Aitken in the HSV VX GTS Commodore from Philip Pilates in another one of the HSV VX GTS Commodores. Graham Alexander running third in the Mitsubishi Evo 5, and then Gary Dean in a Subaru WRX STI. Interesting there, the fact that, obviously the Commodores do run quite well at a wide open circuit like that compared to some of the other circuits they go to during the year. In the Nations Cup, they had a race there, and Jeff Morgan was the winner in the Monsters.com Chrysler Viper. Again, place obviously where the Viper could stretch its legs.
After pole position yesterday, the interest was going to be on, could the Viper hold off the pack? It did, and Jeff Morgan, the Monster.com car, right out in front. Congratulations.
Well, thanks very much. It's 20 months of hard work, and this is the Viper's first round win. Today's race being double points. As you probably know, we had one race win at Eastern Creek, but this is our first round win, so we're very excited.
Mm. Now, it would have been an interesting time for yourself as you saw the Ferrari behind you and then a whole bunch of Porsches all in position, ready to strike if you made any error at all.
Yes, well, I mean, I had Jimmy Richards for the first four laps, and right behind him was Mark Noski and then Peter Fitzgerald trying to, poke their noses in everywhere, and it takes a few laps for the Viper to settle down. So they were a fairly nervous four laps, and then we had the Lambo come up with Paul Stokel, and so we had three or four very close laps before he went off. So and then finally we had the attentions of Mark Noske again when the brakes on the Viper started to go.
It would have been fairly exciting racing, but you now have to turn your attention back from your Chrysler Viper to a much more nimble Porsche, which you're joining up with Peter Fitzgerald.
Yes, well, I mean, the Viper and the Porsche couldn't be two more different motor cars to drive, so now I've got to get my head around that, and I haven't had much time in the car. I've had about 8 or 10 laps in the car yesterday when the clutch was going and the gearbox, so we're not quite sure who's starting the car, but if I start, there's going to be a lot of pressure on me to get on the pace very quickly.
Now, you're starting from the back of the grid because of these problems today.
Yes, we are, yes. It's, the clutch wasn't working yesterday, and then we found out that it's a gearbox problem today, so it's back in the workshop now, having the gearbox changed.
It's going to be a pretty tough ask for anyone to come from that far back, but due to the fact it is 500 kilometres, you've got plenty of time, pit stops and everything to make up that ground.
Yeah, well, I think we've sort of planned a strategy that we think might give us a chance of pulling back some time on the other cars, and we just need a little bit of luck early on, and we could be in there with a big chance of taking it out. I mean, I think the favourites are probably Tony Quinn and Jim Richards, and probably one or two of the Ferraris. We think the Viper, well, we believe our Viper, the reason we're not running it is it's got to have 5 pit stops compared to everything else is 4. So we think that's going to be hard-pressed to be competitive, and we're just questioning the reliability of the Lambo. So it's going to be a fascinating Sunday.
It is indeed. And Murray Carter also turning up with his Corvette, also a new car to the grid for this 500.
Yes, well, you can never discount Murray. He's always there and he never gives up, and it's a very good car, the Camaro.
Well, the important thing is for the championship, you've got the points on the day, and congratulations to you and the entire monster.com.au team.
Yeah, thanks very much, and it's been a hard time for our team, but we're finally at the pointy end, and we're now running fourth, and we've got a chance to shoot for second in the championship, which would be, you know, a great result for the year.
With Mark Noske making aim there in the Prancing Horse Racing Ferrari 360 Challenge. Of course, Mark, the word out that he will be taking the Formula One Ferrari that he normally does some demonstration laps off from time to time back to Italy to join in our Ferrari Celebration Day, where he'll also be running a Ferrari 360 Challenge in a one of the Euro races of that series. In third was Jim Richards in his Porsche GT3, and then Neil Bates in the Techno Autosports Porsche GT3. In GT production, race there, Scott Lodesman was the winner in a Holden VTSS from Brian Carr and a Ford Falcon AU XR8 with John McElroy, Southern Rural Ford Dealers Ford Falcon AU 2 XR8. So they're doing quite well there. Daryl Coon finished fourth in that in the XR6. And in the second of the GT production races, it was Brian Carr who was the winner there from John McElroy, and Daryl Coon actually working his way up to third.
Daryl Coon has wrapped up the Class D Championship for 6-cylinder cars at Sandown's races today. And congratulations, Daryl, doing it at your home circuit.
Yeah, thanks very much. We didn't have it all our own way. We had to start off the rear of the grid in the first race. But lucky for us, we got away to a good clean start and was able to work our way back through the field and actually pick up a win for the class, which then set up the championship lead overall.
Now, Holgerson and Chadwick both have been giving you a fairly hard time right throughout the year. Chadwick up in Queensland, I think it was, and then Holgerson last weekend at Winton.
Yeah, well, that's right. They've been given a bit of a boost, I think, with some of the parity changes that have been happening in the class. And unfortunately, that sort of undermined some of a lot of the good work that our team was doing, which has brought them a bit closer to us. We haven't been very happy about that, but I guess on the other side they're very happy about it. But certainly it's a very close championship, and to win it this early, with still one round to go, is an excellent surprise for us and something that we're all very proud of.
Probably the first Ford championship winner of season 2001.
Oh, I haven't checked all the records yet, but you're probably right, actually.
So not a bad little notch in the belt as well.
I'll have to give Jeff Pilates a call on Monday morning.
Perhaps that'll help with the sponsorship dramas, because I know you have been fighting all year just to keep the car on the racetrack.
Yeah, look, I think it's probably one of those things that motorsport is expensive and you do need assistance to put on a good show. I'd like to think that we put on a good show and give the Ford fans value for money. So we do need support from all the companies that are keen on motorsport, and that's probably the same for every other team as well.
And for yourself, tomorrow, obviously you'll be watching this race with a lot of interest, the Sandown 500.
Well, I guess it's a bit of a prelude for Bathurst, so it's a good way to sum up some of the competition beforehand. We will be watching. We're not going to be participating on this occasion due to some of the politics involved for this particular meeting. But, we can look to see what's happening and, we will certainly approach it with interest.
Well, congratulations. Wrapping up the championship with, of course, two races left to run in the championship is a good way to enjoy the rest of the season.
Well, it'll certainly mean up at Oran Park that we can, let our hair down a little bit and, try and turn it on for the crowd. And if it doesn't come off, well, it doesn't really matter. We've already achieved our goals for the season. Oran Park's a bit like a home away from home track for us. It's one of my favourite tracks in Australia, so I'm really looking forward to getting up to Sydney.
Well, congratulations and thanks for joining us here on ProCar today.
All right, thanks very much for that, Craig, and thanks very much to MDC Industrial, Peter Warren Ford and Dunlop for all their support this year. Couldn't have done it without them, and also the work from my fine team.
Interesting there as well that Alan Holgerson in the Toyota Camry CSI V6 finished fourth in that second race for the GD production class.
David Ross, congratulations, a win there in race number one, and then a pretty hard-fought battle with Luke Yulden in race number two of GT Performance Class E.
Yeah, thanks very much. It was sort of a pretty hard battle there today with Luke and myself. We had a sort of Class C car sort of mixed up in it all, which sort of separated us like in the first race, and in the second race we're sort of both getting held up, and once I had a gap going, it got quickly filled by Luke, and he just sort of come past me, and then I passed him back again, and sort of we had a bit of a battle, and then I come through a turn and got a bit out of shape, and Luke nipped back on the inside of me again. So we're happy to get the points for the weekend, but and sort of keep that championship lead. So
it has been a very interesting championship, and the Caltex Havoline Proton Satria GTI has really showed itself in good stead against, of course, the Astras, Vectras, and including Mazdas and everything else that's come up against it.
Oh, we've done well, but it's sort of it's a new car, and I missed the first two rounds, as you know, and we've just sort of been chasing our tail from word go. But, we've been trying different tyres and whatnot, and basically we've come up with a tyre package that suits us, and now sort of towards the end of the season we're really showing our strengths. So, yeah, it's been really good.
This meeting so far this weekend, how have you enjoyed going to Sandown, and what has the atmosphere been like for knowing the 500 coming up tomorrow?
Oh, the atmosphere was really good. Like, I think earlier on we had busloads of kids coming in to sort of get us all the signed autographs, so they were really good, and we had sort of good exposure. But it was a good weekend, and I'm just a shame I'm not going to be there tomorrow. So
yes, Class E cars, of course, not eligible to enter the Sandown 500, and obviously you weren't quite in a position to be able to shoehorn your way into a higher class car for that one-off race.
No, well, at times we're certainly not far off some of the sort of from B, C, D class cars. Our times were basically not far off them, so sort of the speed difference wasn't really a problem, but yeah, that's another issue.
Mm. Well, congratulations on a great run today, and we do wish you all the best as you head up to, I think Oran Park is the next one on your calendar.
Yep.
Thanks very much, David.
No worries at all.
So some good racing there for those. As well, they had the Utes running as well, and there it was a clean sweep for a man by the name of Mick Donoher, who we've seen in the past in V8s and a ill-reputed TV program on the ABC some years ago, and he had a clean sweep there of all three races in the Utes and various second-place wins there, including Rod Wilson and co.
In fact, on the Saturday race, there was a few people who were a bit upset by his tactics. He used the rubbing his racing principle to knock a few competitors out of the way and was able to go through with the victory in that first race, and obviously he continued it on from there. Remembering, that is a pretty good result considering the second race of Procar Ute is a reverse grid. The first race is you draw out of a hat for your starting positions, the second race is a reverse grid, and then the third race is the fastest to the front. So, considering he won the first heat, he started last again in the second race and has driven through as well, it does sort of put pay, because there is some good runners in that class as well, to perhaps his reputation of his much maligned reputation, which saw him replaced by a girl at the Ultra Tune team at the beginning of this year.
And we haven't seen that car since.
Now, Craig, it may also be just simply an indication of how many cars he pushed out of the way.
Oh, man, you are being very harsh there. Now, I heard that you did mention, Peter, in your introduction there, that a lot of motor racing in the United States has been cancelled. I think a few people in Europe would be wishing the same thing for the kart race, because it certainly wasn't the way they wanted to have their first oval track race in Europe pan out. But to that end, here in Australia, geez, you'd almost be cancelling Bathurst with 40 entries.
Well, it is the smallest field for Bathurst since 1997. They've got 41 cars entered, but they're fully expecting one of those not to make the grid, as some of the drivers juggle around, and in particular their budgets to run such a long event. Really, one of the factors that has led to a fairly small field there is a lot of the people who enjoy their V8 racing and compete as a hobby, they're getting their chance at glory in the Konica series. So they're getting to the opportunity to spend their budget in this smaller, shorter race on the Saturday. But the other real advantage of the Konica series is, as you look through the entry list this year, there's very few people there that don't have some quite useful experience in V8s and at Bathurst. So we should be able to avoid Russell Ingall getting into trouble shooting off his mouth about the slower cars. I think most of the driver pairings have been announced previously and been discussed. Some of the late changes that we're seeing here, of course, is one of the high-profile teams is who's going to drive with Marcus Ambrose. Greg Crick sort of standing down from that one after the Queensland 500. And unfortunately, the Pertec Racing, they didn't take up Neil Bates. I'm sure he would have performed very well in that car. They've picked up another competitor who's had some pretty good runs in the Konica series this year and does have a little bit of Bathurst experience, and that's Wayne Wakefield, who's getting quite a following in the Konica series. So it'll be quite interesting to see how they perform. Marcus Ambrose being pretty exciting in the last round from Winton the other week. The other interesting driver pairing is Gary Holt has signed up Kevin Mundy. Kevin also having Konica experience throughout the year, so they should be quite an interesting car to watch further back in the pack. And also in terms of the Canberra driver, Dale Breed, again a good competitor from the Konica series, he's teaming up with Craig Harris's team, but he will be in the other car. He'll be teaming up with Alan Heath in the Power Racing, while Craig Harris will be teaming up with Michael Simpson. Michael showing a lot of form coming out of the Konica series also. So a little bit of a smaller field, but I think it is a higher quality one, and it should be quite interesting nonetheless, and hopefully there'll be less instances of slower cars getting in the way. In other V8 news, and sort of related to our early discussions about Sandown, but in terms of V8s for Sandown, the rumour of the week seems to be that GMC, the title sponsor from the street race in Canberra, may be moving their sponsorship next year to the Sandown V8 race that closes out the season. So that will leave, I guess, another gap in the funding for the Canberra V8 race. Let's hope they can find another sponsor there quite quickly. But we have seen with other quite high-profile V8 races, finding a sponsor is a little bit harder as we lead into Bathurst without a title sponsor.
Yeah, just returning to some of last week's racing. Last weekend, two races of the British Touring Car Championship at Silverstone, and there the winner of the first race was Phil Bennett, the man who was coming back from the suspended sentence, as they say, for bad driving in the previous race meeting. He came back, and the fact that he didn't have any success ballast on board, he used the pole position he'd set and converted that into an early race lead and drove off into the distance. And his only worry was working his way through the close bales in the production class field near the tail end of the race. Meanwhile, behind him, the Vauxhall Works pairing of Jason Plateau and Ivan Muller had a hectic scrap in the early laps with James Thompson and the Peugeot of Steve Soper. So a lot of fun and games going on there. In the second race, it really got into fun and games with Jason Plateau ending up being stripped of his win in the race after he'd batted his way past his Vauxhall teammate Ivan Muller's car to cross the line first. So what happened was they awarded Plateau a 30-second penalty for his move, which put him down in third place in the results. So it sort of moved things back to the stage where that Plateau still leads the championship, but the gap between himself and Muller is much reduced. As well, last weekend we had the latest two rounds of the German Touring Car Championship, the DTM, and there it was a Bernd Schneider weekend where he took out both the short sprint race and the long endurance race. In both cases, it was Mercedes-Benz 1, 2 and 3, with Bernd Schneider letting Peter Dumbreck and Uwe Alzen in Mercedes-Benz's over the line, with Laurent Ayala being best of the rest in the Audi TTR. And Alain Menu actually once again showing his true driving style, finishing quite well up in fifth place in the Opel Astra for the Euro team. So with those two wins, Schneider has done once again the usual expected thing from him and wrapped up the DTM for another year. He's sort of almost as good as a few other drivers around we know around the place who seem to wrap it up before the season is finished.
And now, Colin, with the disasters in the US, there's been talk from Formula One about whether they should go to Indianapolis or not. What is the latest there? Will we see Formula One in Indy this year?
Well, the word is that the United States Grand Prix will go ahead as scheduled on September 30. FIA President Max Mosley and Indianapolis Motor Speedway boss Tony George have both confirmed the race will run, despite this week's terrorist attacks in New York and Washington. Both George and Mosley said that they did not expect any change to the announced schedule, and they believe that the arrangements and plans required to get the Formula One teams over from the Italian Grand Prix this weekend over to the US and Indianapolis on time, including the air freighting of cars, equipment, and all the people, would be okay. And of course, this is all dependent very much on air services remaining normal. They actually have talked about the possibility of actually flying all the equipment to Canada and then trucking them as a huge convoy from Canada down if the air travel restrictions continue to be a problem in the United States. One of the interesting parts this weekend is that the Ferrari team has dropped all logos on their cars as a sign of respect to the American tragedies. So that for this weekend and this race only, both Ferraris are completely and utterly just in Ferrari red. The noses of the cars are painted black with just a little Ferrari logo on the nose. And the only thing other that they have on the cars is their race numbers and drivers' names and nationality flags, and that is all. And that was out of respect to their sponsors, most of them who are headquartered in New York, and some of them were did have staff in the World Trade Center. But the interesting point was that the BMW Williams driver, Ralph Schumacher, said that he believed that this weekend's Italian Grand Prix and the US Grand Prix in a fortnight's time should have been cancelled out of respect for those killed and also in light of the greatly increased security risks to all involved. Ralph Schumacher said that he'd be urging his family and friends not to attend the next two Grand Prix on security and safety grounds, and said that he'd be very interested to see if Formula One Supremos Bernie Eccleston and Max Mosley attend the US Grand Prix or found reasons not to attend the event. The question he raised was the fact that if people were intent on performing terrorist acts, 200,000 people would make a pretty good target.
Yes. Now, it's interesting the comment you had about them flying into Canada and trucking all of the Formula One equipment across the border. It's interesting how the increased focus on security has impacted the auto industry in the US. A lot of the auto manufacturing is done, of course, in Detroit and cities like that, but also in Ontario in Canada. There's a number of factories there as well. And current automotive manufacturing is so reliant on inventory control techniques called just-in-time, where truckloads of parts have to arrive, as the name suggests, just-in-time. There's like a four-hour window that if the truck does not arrive, the factory grinds to a halt. The added security on the border between Canada and the US has led to 12 and 14-hour delays as trucks line up to have the trucks searched. looking for any sort of terrorist implements on those trucks. So I think the Formula One trucks coming through from Canada, there could be delays there in any event.
I think if they're doing what they do for a lot of these Formula One Grand Prix, what they do is they actually have a system whereby security personnel and customs personnel of the country that they're going to next actually are put in place when they load the equipment. They place all the equipment in the shipping containers under seal so that when it is then offloaded at the other end, it's on the basis that it's known what has been loaded beforehand. So it does help them speed up that sort of situation, which is a way to go. Interesting enough, if we also look to what Australians are doing overseas this weekend, there's racing, of course, with Formula 1. There's the Formula 3000 Championship going on at Italy. And at Monza, there was a fairly incident-packed race, which saw two restarts. And as it was Giorgio Pantano who took his maiden international Formula 3000 victory in what was a fairly hectic race, with this year's champion Justin Wilson consolidating his place at the top of the championship by coming home second, while Riccardo Spificchio took the final place on the podium. As it was, Mark Webber bizarrely crashed out on the second formation lap, leaving the Australian stranded on 39 points in the standings in equal second place with Thomas Eng, who's making his championship debut with the Prost team this weekend. So Wilson's final championship margin is an impressive 32 points. Meanwhile, James Courtney, qualified on pole for one of the British Formula 3 Championship races taking place at Brands Hatch, and the other race he's qualified fifth. In the first race qualifying session, he demolished his car. The team did a big job and got it all back together again and ready to go. So good to see there James Courtney. Of course, he must be worried about how things are going with Jaguar Racing, with Bobby Rahal being given the flick there, and apparently Nicky Lauder is not particularly interested in the Formula 3 team by the sound of things.
Yes, but from what I gather, and Bobby Rahal did like James Courtney, so it was going to be an interesting thing to see if Lauder was going to take to Courtney like Bobby Rahal had, because there was talk of test drives and everything like that. And how must Mark Webber feel? This is the second time that his teammate has been called up to Formula One, and he hasn't. Of course, Ricardo Zonta, his teammate from Mercedes days, although they weren't in the same car, they were part of the same team, he has already been called up to Formula One. And now Thomas Eng is the driver who's replacing Luciano Berti in the Prost there for that event. Now, WRC news. Now, a provisional calendar has been released, and I know that, Colin, since your voice is a whole heap better than mine, you should be doing this.
Yeah, well, it's actually good to see the fact that the World Rally Championship calendar is out, and the beauty of it is that they've started to realise that one of the biggest costs is travel and transportation. And we look at the calendar for 2002, and it includes what they call an Antipodean doubleheader and a return to a traditional spring slot, that is a European spring rather than an Australian spring, for the Corsica Rally. The Portuguese rally is dropped, and an asphalt-based rally Deutschland in Germany will be added in. And a lot of these rallies are now going to be run in pairs, so that there are races in similar locations, similar areas, and also similar styles of rally. So, for example, two tarmac rallies, two dirt rallies, so teams aren't having to jump from one to the other. As it is, the rally calendar, as it is at this time, which is still provisional, but apparently it's going to be ratified hopefully shortly, has the Monte Carlo rally being the opener, with the Swedish rally, then the Cyprus rally, Catalunya rally, the Tour de Corse, Rally Argentina, Acropolis rally, Safari rally, Rally Finland, Rally Deutschland, San Remo rally, New Zealand rally, Rally Australia, and Rally of Great Britain is always finishing up. The dates planned for next year, October 4 to 6, New Zealand rally. Ooh, Tony won't like that. Then November 1 to 3rd, Rally Australia. So that means a lot of our Kiwi friends will be watching Rally New Zealand rather than a certain race on a mountain in Australia.
Well, it has certainly been an interesting week. I think all of us here send our best wishes off to anyone that had family in America, in the Twin Towers or at the Pentagon. And, of course, on any of those flights, we do know I think it was three Australians had been confirmed killed in that accident. Those acts of terrorism. I think 90 are still considered as missing, and our thoughts go out to all the families over here, particularly of the Australians.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's an unfortunate time, an unfortunate thing to see, but I suppose, as they say, life goes on, and the best way we can say, I think the following that they've followed with Formula One is the best way we can show these people that they can't win is we just get on, we keep on going on with life, and we'll find you and take care of you in due course.
Peter, of course, next weekend is a start of a fairly busy time of as the kart series will, with heavy hearts, I'm sure, be heading off to the Rockingham Circuit in Britain. Rally New Zealand next weekend, of course, is something foremost in your mind.
Yes, some quite interesting events coming up. Great to see some rally action from New Zealand. And it's great to see the increased quality of the TV coverage. The TV coverage was always very good, but with the greater focus from David Richards from ProDrive and holding the TV rights, he's really making a go of bringing a sport that's very difficult to cover, bringing it into our lounge rooms, into our computer screens in a very timely manner, and really lifting the packageability of that sport. Fantastic to watch. And yes, it'll be interesting as kart move on to England. Again, these guys will be away from their loved ones for that little bit longer. I'm sure they'd rather get home. And of course, our thoughts are with Alex Zanardi as he battles those horrible injuries that he sustained in the race in Germany.
Mm. I think the interesting thing too is with the Rally New Zealand, it's going to be a rally where a lot of teams and a lot of drivers really have got it on the line. They've got to do well in Rally New Zealand, or that's the championship for them. So I think, given the results we've seen in the rallies up to now, Rally New Zealand I think should be a real cracker, because a lot of drivers have said they're going to go for it, because it's make or break time for the championship for them. And again, I'd echo what Peter said, the coverage has, from last year and even the year before, has come ahead leaps and bounds, and all credit to the guys involved with that, because they do recognise what rally spectators are looking for, and some of their coverage of the jumps from Rally of Finland was spectacular.
And of course, Richard Burns coming off that win, he has won in New Zealand before, he's always very, very competitive in New Zealand, and with a victory there, he's really going to take it up to Colin McRae and of course the whole host of Subarus and Mitsubishi's of Tommy Mackinnon, who has got the brand new Mitsubishi out onto the track right now.
Yes, it'll be interesting. And Colin, you're absolutely correct about the New Zealand can be the turning point in the championship. We have to think about recent years, including one where Carlos Sainz was fairly aggressively attacking the rally, leading comfortably, and clobbers a sheep. I mean, how New Zealand is that?
And he didn't even have any mint sauce on board.
Thanks once again for joining us here on Inside Motorsport. The early edition was because up next, after this break, the ACT AFL Grand Final. Thanks for being with us once again on Inside Motorsport.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple S FM Canberra via Comrade Sat, with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.